You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good evening. I'm David Remnick, and I first want to, at the risk of insulting the star, I want to thank filmmakers who did a remarkable job, as Perlstein and Dan Seton, who are here. So thank you very much. I think I've seen about 150 documentaries on the conflict, and this is the first one that made me feel good at the end. And it comes, Salam Fayyad, on an incredibly historic day, a day about which you've had many thoughts, maybe some ambivalence, and it's a complicated event. A state has been given credit in the United Nations in an unprecedented way, and they're celebrating today in Ramallah. They're celebrating throughout Palestine. What about tomorrow morning in terms of the state? What has been achieved? What hasn't been achieved? What does this do? What does it not do? Does it place you in peril? Does it place you in a more optimistic position?
Well, thank you very much, David. And I first would like to thank the audience for the interest they have showed in coming to this movie, see it, and certainly would like to join you at the outset in thanking participant media, Dan Seton, Yoram Milo, and Hanna Usada, as well as others, this small crew, actually, who did this movie over, I don't know how long a period of time it took them, but in any event, happy to be with you and the audience. And thank also Martin Mendek, my friend, who actually decided to do this at the margins of the Saban Forum for this year. Yesterday is a day of a great deal of significance, indeed historic significance. And it also happens to be precisely to the day, 65 years ago, that the same General Assembly that today passed with a substantial majority, more than two-thirds majority, the motion submitted to elevate Palestine's standing to a non-member state, observer state of the United Nations, 65 years ago, passed the famous partition resolution, 29th of November, 1947, which provided for the creation of two states. One has been in existence for about that length of time, because actually some 6 months after that historic resolution of the General Assembly, the State of Israel was created, 15th of May, 1948. And here we are, 65 years later, still looking for ours. So there is that, definitely, parallel, and that's what really adds to the significance of the moment. And that actually is part of the power of the movie we just saw. It's a movie that is largely about Palestinians' quest for being able to live in freedom and dignity in a country of our own. It's about us, really, but it's a movie that started actually rightly, in a way, in a manner that really made a great deal of sense with that historic vote that was taken 15th of May 1948 that essentially gave Israel its birth certificate. So there is that parallel, and the movie actually captured it in a very good way. So yes, it has all of these meanings. But of course, while extremely significant, we cannot but worry about the reality of the day after. And what I really hope, in response to your question, is that this moment is actually seized in order to advance the process in a way that has eluded us for a very long period of time. And by us, I mean Palestinians, Israelis, our friends in the international community, United States, European Union, Russia, United Nations, all powers to be, for so long. The reality, the day after, obviously, is going to be dominated as it is today, as it was on the day before, dominated by the reality of an oppressive occupation that has been with us for more than 45 years. That's not going to go away unless something else happens. What happened today is extremely significant. It's a step of great deal of symbolism, and it moved us, all Palestinians, throughout the world. People felt great about it, not only Ramallah, but as you pointed out, throughout Palestine diaspora is not a Palestinian or freedom-loving person anywhere in the world who would not really actually appreciate how deep and significant a moment this is. But of course, it's really up to us to really move things to the next step, and to really move on to ensure that we really actually get the real thing. What our people are looking for is a genuine state where they can live as free people with dignity. And that's incumbent upon us. So,
but rather than have a next step, do you anticipate paying a price for what occurred today at the UN, whether among the Israeli leadership or the Republicans in the Senate and the House or other political constituents in this entire drama?
It really depends on how things go. I was about to say, actually, what is really important is try to use this in a productive and positive way. For those who actually were skeptical about this or did not like it one bit, as a matter of fact, well, it's behind us now. It happened. Mm-hmm. I think we really need to be level-headed about this. It's very significant. It is of great deal of significance. But I don't think we really should spend too much time admiring the creation if we liked it or sulking if we didn't. I mean, what we must all do is to see how we can seize the moment, take advantage of what has happened, and see if this would not provide an impetus to a new, strengthened, more credible political process, one that is capable of delivering an end to the Israeli occupation.
You're the last person I have to spell out all the forces mitigating against that happening, whether it's the division between Hamas and the political forces in the West Bank, whether it's the Israeli coalition that's moving even more to the right now that Lieberman has joined Netanyahu, you have an election coming. All those forces you know much better than I do, and they're formidable. What is the scenario for a path toward negotiations and a path toward the road that you so desperately want to see Palestine on?
I hope
independent of today.
Yeah, I hope that not much more time will be spent in self-denial of the kind that, I mean, at least some of which we saw in this movie. But we also listen to some serious voices of reason in this movie on the Israeli side or projecting the Israeli point of view, saying how bad it would be if, in fact, this opportunity is missed and how terrible it would be for Israel, for the Palestinians, for the region, for the international community, for the cause of peace and justice in the region. I hope that, you know, more will begin to see things this way, and the sooner the better. Because, like many others, I mean, I feel that with each passing day, that our people in the region generally, continue to see the horizon on this political process, on the prospect of peace, with stability receding. I believe that's something that is quite dangerous, and if it really is allowed to continue, I'm afraid there'll be a lot more skepticism, and people will begin to invest out, if you will, and opt out of investing into the prospects of the delivering. And then what happens is something that I believe would be terrible for all parties concerned.
What's the best thing Barack Obama can do? What is the most effective thing he could do at this point politically to affect this process in the most positive way possible?
I think first and foremost, to try to, in a very efficient manner, take stock of the experience over the past 4 years. And in some important ways, those 4 years provide an example of things that really should be avoided. Because, you know, the past 4 years have not been productive, I mean, to say the very least. I believe it's high time for the administration to lead, working with others in the international community, mainly the European Union, get together as quickly as possible and have some serious discussion as to whether or not things should be allowed to continue to proceed in the way they have been proceeding, actually not only over the past 4 years, but generally for much of the past 20 years or so. I think it's really about time to lay out expectations in terms of what a fair resolution and settlement to this conflict might look like. And you'll find that actually a lot of these issues, those issues have been visited before. I think with some determination and as a matter of fact, trying to place things within a framework that has a certain timeline to it, begin to really establish rules of the game, new ground rules where the accountability bar is set a little bit higher than before. Both sides need the leadership and involvement of the United States, and both are and should be expected actually to be accountable in the sense of...
But what should that leadership do in concrete terms?
Lay out expectations of the parties in terms of what's expected of both of them in order to produce that which we all want to see happen. A lot of those things are spelled out in the document that Senator Mitchell, who appeared in this movie, as a matter of fact, has something to do with the so-called roadmap to peace. Mm-hmm. Well, Marwan Mashar is here. I have a lot of an intimate knowledge of what the contents of that roadmap were. But actually, they made sense relative to the overall goal of that process. We Palestinians were supposed to actually improve governance. We had to actually essentially demonstrate that we are capable of governing ourselves in an effective way in all spheres of governance, beginning with security, but not only limited to the sphere of security, financial, economic management, rule of law, and what have you. On the Israeli side, there were also expectations. A lot was said and continues to be said about settlement activity. That's key among those obligations and requirements, but it's not the only one. One of the actual problems over the past 4 years is, while legitimate, focus on settlement activity to the exclusion of other issues actually in some way stood in the way of making progress on other issues. Military incursions, for example.
So that was an American mistake, just focus on settlement activity?
I believe the focus should be on all of the requirements, and not only on settlement activity needing to come to a stop. That was recognized as something that was important, part of getting ready or paving the way toward lasting peace and security in the region. But it was not the only requirement. There were other requirements that were completely ignored. And worse, there were some issues that were ignored, as a matter of fact, at the risk of, allowing for the possibility of things sliding back in the direction of vicious cycle of violence. For example, the violent manner in which the Israeli army deals with nonviolent Palestinian demonstrators and demonstrations. I mean, this is both wrong and can be potentially extremely dangerous. I mean, you can easily get to a point where it has been or has become an incident too many. Settler violence, you saw some elements, features of that here. Those issues did not really get the kind of attention they should have gotten over the past 4 years, and I believe they must.
Mr. Prime Minister, I don't mean to be a film critic here, but I started out by saying this seemed to me a profoundly optimistic film, but maybe only on the surface, because it seemed to me that all the players in the film were at once incredibly constructive. You, the man who lost his son to Hamas and is yet fighting for peace, the young woman who's at Hebrew University who's going to demonstration at Sheikh Jarrah and all the rest. But it seems to me all of these constituencies are less than they used to be. These liberal Zionists who are demonstrating, the Amos Ozes who are out in front of the Tel Aviv City Hall. And quite frankly, sir, with all the admiration in the room for you, you yourself, who have a constituency here and in the international community, but at home, you're a highly controversial figure. And while prime minister, it's hard always to see what you're following is on the street, as they say. Forget about Gaza, but in the West Bank itself. How do you assess your own position at home?
Before I get into that, things are not nearly as bad. For one thing, Yitzhak Frankenthal actually was still able toward the end of the movie to light his pipe with one hand while driving with the other.
That's an undeniable skill.
I thought that was really remarkable. So,
don't try that at home.
But that was a powerful scene, by the way. Not about the pipelines, and about the past. But in any event, no, I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, beginning actually with the period or the point in time and when the Palestinian Authority started to have difficulty making ends meet, especially the PA, its overall standing started to erode. We've been having serious financial difficulties for more than 2.5 years right now. That was certainly a complicating factor that led to an erosion in the standing Palestinian Authority and was compounded, obviously, by a lack of effectiveness, as it was seen by the public, on the part of the Palestinian Authority in delivering tangible results politically. We were seen and continue to be seen as a party to a political process that, to say the least, has not been very productive.
Right.
If anything, it has led to and has been about a lot of disappointment, if not outright disillusionment. So, yeah, you tend to lose a lot of whatever capital you may have had at some point if you're confronted with a situation like this.
Despite all the building that we saw, despite all the constructive work that we saw.
Well, you know, people in Palestine, people are like people in this country. What have you done for me lately? I mean, we're normal, at least in that sense. So there is that, obviously. And that's really a challenge of being government. I mean, you really have to earn your colors every day. And it's a tough thing to do if you're operating in the context of a highly oppressive occupation without much to really, that much to really support your effort in terms of really bringing about better living conditions and all of that.
How do you assess what happened in Gaza, in the conflict between Israel and Gaza and the Palestinians a couple of weeks ago? It was extraordinary to me that in the wake of it, everybody came out declaring victory. Bibi Netanyahu won, Hamas won, Egypt won, the United States won. And meanwhile, 150 people were dead, and there were a lot of enormous fear and backward movement, to say the least. How could anybody have won that?
I hope people would stop thinking of what happened in Gaza. Along the same lines, there'll be many wars if everybody emerges as winner. Well, to a large extent, this was predictable. I mean, claim of victory by as many parties as you have mentioned, in some ways was predictable.
Except for Mahmoud Abbas, who was declared the opposite.
We in the PA generally, as a matter of fact, and I can tell you, it contributed to what I describe and consider to be a doctrinal defeat for what we stand for. There's no question about it. There's no question about it. We stand for what you have heard me say. We stand for a nonviolent path to freedom. And we have not been able to deliver. It was Hamas that was able to secure the release of more than 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. It was Hamas pushing few buttons that was able to get this much attention over a very short period of time. This is the fundamental sense in which I can very truthfully tell you that what we have sustained is a doctrinal defeat. It's very serious. I do not really say this from the point of view of someone who's resigned to the fact that this is something that we cannot recover from. I think it's absolutely important for us to recover from it. Mm-hmm. But we have to be honest with ourselves and really call it for what it is. Palestinian Authority that stands for a nonviolent path to freedom, stands for building strong, competent institutions of government capable of delivering services in a highly responsive and responsible manner to the people, stands for what good government is about, what should be, building toward a state that's based on foundational principles that are universally shared. I mean, I think should really have a better chance, should have more to work with than it has been having to work with, to be honest with you. And this requires much better management of the political process on the one hand. And, you know, I cannot really overemphasize the importance of this particular point because we just can't keep going operating under the notion that we need to deepen our readiness for statehood. There's so much you can do, as Jeremy Ben-Ami had to say on the movie. You really need to begin to really see these two paths converge. Building to a statehood on the one hand, but also, you know, delivering political results, beginning to see the occupation regime in process of being dismantled, however gradually. But what our people have been actually looking at is an occupation regime that with each passing day became more deeply entrenched. It's no surprise, therefore, that the PA would find itself in the position it finds itself today.
Do you have any common language at this point? Do you have anything to say to Hamas or is this just a complete conflictual relationship?
No, there is, and there must be, I tell you, because, you know, as a matter of fact, as part of being ready for statehood, I believe it's very important for us to be able to reunify our country and the institutions of our people. I think continuing to be separated the way we have been since mid-2007 is a serious risk to the continued viability of two-state solution. Without reunification, without Gaza, I don't think the two-state solution will be viable. We believe in a path of negotiated settlement to peace, and clearly support for a two-state solution in Israel is based on what we have said. Several proponents of the solution, like Tzipi Livni, for example, how she was presenting the case. If Gaza continues to drift away in the direction of becoming a standalone entity or more, well, that takes out some 1.6, 1.7 million Palestinians out of the demographic equation, as you have said on the movie as well. So much for the appeal of two-state solution in Israel. So, from our point of view, in addition to all of that, it's absolutely important for us to be able to reunify the country. So there is common language, in fact, and there is that which is absolutely essential in order for us to be able to take off. And that is, to define it with precision, agreement to a security doctrine along the lines that you have heard me explain.
I want to give a chance to the audience to ask some questions. I'm going to ask one last question, and please, when you do ask a question, let it be a question, not a statement, a speech, a declaration.
We take advice, too.
Absolutely. A little bit, just a little bit. A very general question, but I hope you can answer it in specifics. Yeah. How have the dynamics of the Arab Spring helped or hurt you in your quest? Now that it's taken a kind of darker maturity in some ways.
You know, in some way, actually, it sort of brought into sharper focus the need for our people to be able to live as free people, because essentially our cause is about freedom, justice, enfranchisement, and that's the essence of what underlay the start of the so-called Arab Spring. And you saw a lot of that, as a matter of fact. I mean, a lot of people drawing parallel between what was happening or beginning to happen in streets in Arab countries and absence of that sense of enfranchisement and all in Palestine for as long as, for a very long period of time. And so, therefore, early on, at least, it has helped. However, the ensuing preoccupation within the region, but also internationally, with what was going on in the region, contributed to marginalizing our cause. And I believe so much so that we really were shoved off to the back burner. And we paid a dear price because of that. It was not intended to happen this way, but that was the consequence of the Arab Spring. And it also coincided with a period when the political cycle in this country was driving up in the direction of elections, with the EU being consumed with unprecedented financial crisis, and with so much less, therefore, of the terms of respective administrations of all of these countries available. A lot of it really was spent, and a lot of those energies directed toward looking at other countries in the region at the expense of the Palestinian cause. So we therefore really paid a dear price because of it in that important sense. We have to recover from this because it is important. You hear a lot of people these days begin to say again that no matter what else happens, you need to really be able to solve this conflict. The Palestinian-Israeli conflict, if you are to have lasting peace and security in the region, and in ways that probably would validate the fundamental message of the Arab Spring.
There's a gentleman in the back who's raising his hand with alarming speed. Go ahead. Please say your name so
sure.
That way.
My name is Mohammed Abdullah. I'm from Syria. Congratulations on today.
Say your name.
Mohammed Abdullah. I'm from Syria.
Okay.
Congratulations on today, decision. One question. I want to pick up on David's question about what President Obama can do. To ask, do you really believe President Obama wants to do anything, or he gave up after he failed in stopping the settlements? Because I don't believe that Palestinian state has been in his priority and in the priorities in his schedule. And if you look at the third presidential debate between President Obama and Governor Romney, nobody mentioned the Palestinian state. They talked about Iran, Libya, Syria, everything except the Palestinian state.
True
and
enough.
One final question. Is Palestinian well, state
let's
wants
one,
to go to the
one,
ICC?
Sir, let's do one question, sure. if we can. Go ahead.
Yeah, answer to your first question was provided by a lady who shook her head, basically saying no. look, I mean, President Obama has a lot on his plate, I mean, obviously. I hope that actually his administration will accord this issue the priority and the importance and the attention it deserves. My own sense, though, is that unless there begins to be some activity that is suggestive of possibility of progress, once again we lose that competition to other issues. I mean, I'm afraid. So I think fundamentally there must be that interest. I mean, that interest was always there on the part of all administrations in trying to do something. It doesn't really matter what happens during elections campaign, what people say in debates, particularly in primaries. We featured some of those primaries in ways that a lot of people would soon forget about, for one. But in any event, I hope there'll be some attention given to this early on, again, taking advantage of the experience of the past 4 years. I mean, issues really need to be approached a lot more seriously. Questions need to really begin to be put forward in a straightforward way. What is our problem with settlement activity? Oh, I see General Rami now. I didn't before. Hi. But, I mean, he said it in the movie. But beyond that, it's actually, that diminishing sense of assurance that someday we're going to really be able to have a state so long as that activity continues. It's the credibility of the political process. That's the political side of the damage associated with continuing construction in our territory and expansion. That's what that. Fundamentally, I think the problem today, as I see it, is that there is a wide gap between that which the government of Israel is prepared to offer, and that which we Palestinians are minimally prepared to accept. What we really need, first and foremost, is for a straightforward question to be put forward to the government of Israel. It's a very simple question. Do you accept as a solution to this conflict the emergence of a fully sovereign state of Palestine on the territory occupied in 1967? Yes or no? Yes or no? I mean, that's what we really need. We do not have that assurance today. We did not have over the past years. We have not had for a long period of time. That's what's really missing. And that, I believe, fundamentally is what we would like to see the administration do first and foremost. Really get down to it and really ask these fundamental questions. Because what you really have, I can tell you something, some of you at least may have noticed. Most recent primaries in Israel. There was an ad in the Jerusalem Post, and it was labeled something like accountability time. And the ad ran something like this. It basically was...
An ad for whom?
The point of it was, these are the people who have opposed state of Palestine, meaning these are the people who are against two-state solution. Essentially promoting the candidates, taking pride in the fact that they have opposed and have been opposing to a set solution. I mean, that's actually part of the leader of the current coalition government, that's Likud party. These were the Likud primaries. So there's fundamentally a lot that is wrong with the current alignment. And that is why I think it's very important to early on begin to put forward these questions. And I think it's important not to wait until after the Israeli elections. I think it's important to begin to put those questions forward now.
We had a question up here, up top, and then we'll go lower. In the lighter shirt with the beard. I'm just
That's me.
Describing it.
Thank you. My name is Gaithal Omari, and I actually want to kind of continue on this theme. Because what I've heard from you, Dr. Salam, and what I've been hearing a lot is the need for a political horizon, the need for assurances. Frankly, my assessment with the current set of characters and current dynamics, we will not have the end game. We will not have peace anytime soon until things stabilize. And I doubt that we're going to get any clear assurances. So short of the big one, short of the kind of big, clear political horizon, what can we do to stabilize the situation and to keep things alive? And I'm particularly building on what you said earlier about the need for at least some gradual steps to show the Palestinians that the Israelis are serious about moving forward. What kind of steps are these? What can we look for in the medium term, short term, to ensure there is stability and at least, if not full peace, then lack of collapse?
Thank you, Brett. Good to see you. Let me first say, on the question of assurances, it'd be good if we really can get those directly, but we'll be equally satisfied if those assurances are given to an adequately assuring degree to the Americans. I mean, if the United States President were to come to us and say, I'm fairly assured based on conversation I've had with the Israeli Prime Minister, that we'll be able to have the kind of deal that we're able to live with, that's good enough from our point of view. We approach the world this way, for certain. But beyond that, which I think is essential, if we're really going to begin to see some activity that could promise beginning of an end to the Israeli occupation, which I think is absolutely essential. First and foremost, the PA needs to be stabilized. I mean, we've been losing ground for much of the past 3 years because we have been running on an empty tank of gas, basically. Not mainly, but only because we've been getting less assistance, less aid than pledged or than promised. And with that, you obviously cannot meet obligations in timely fashion. That chips away at your credibility, which already actually is damaged or undermined by lack of progress on that political front. So things kind of are reinforcing each other in a negative and adverse way. That's very, very important. That's one thing. Secondly, those other issues I quickly mentioned, like, for example, paying attention to the need to begin to see some change behavior on the part of the Israeli army. It's absolutely important. There's no justification for dealing with nonviolent demonstrations in a violent way. That's both wrong and dangerous. Settler violence is something that really actually needs to be reined in. And it has been detrimental not only to Palestinians, but to Israelis as well.
You've described what your bottom line is in terms of the 67, more or less 67 borders. The bottom line for Middle Israel, as it were, which in its great majority is for a settlement, for a peace settlement, at least in the abstract, their bottom line is, what do we get the next day? We still have a Hamas-led Gaza, which looks extremely aggressive, in no way democratic, and likely, quite possibly, to continue being aggressive in the aftermath. How do you answer that question to Israelis insofar as you want to?
I think it's very important for there to be collaborative effort on the part of all involved and concerned to ensure in the aftermath of what happened in Gaza that the PA would be having an important role to play in arrangements that may be agreed, particularly regarding geography and passages, is very important. So we begin to really deal with those issues because, for one thing, what the situation has been like, and I think that's something that I believe Israel would be very much interested in changing, is a situation where you have a non-state operator acting out of Gaza with the logic of a non-state operator to the extent that that non-state operator can begin to act more like a state operator, that works toward overall stability. But it's really best, in my view, to ensure that convergence or evolution would take place within the framework of Palestinian Authority. That's absolutely important. That's how you really begin to deal with these issues. But then also the other thing I would say, it's of paramount importance for Israel not to really continue to wait until the perfect arrangement emerges. It is of great deal of importance, you know, for us Palestinians to be able to reunite our country and the institutions of our people in order for there to be the possibility of a Palestinian state. So we really need to be able to find a way, you know, toward that. There are many conditions that have been attached to that, and I think it's really time to really begin to focus on that which is absolutely necessary in order for an arrangement between us and Hamas to be viable. And I think it would be of great deal of importance to really see to it that such arrangement is found on the basis of an adequate security doctrine. It is going to be the case that Hamas would have a political platform that's different from ours. Is that enough to stop the effort to put the country back together, the institutions back together? I don't think so. But is lack of adequate security doctrine enough to, or would lack of adequate security doctrine be okay to have and still entertain the notion of putting the country back together and to reconcile? I'd say no. What is really absolutely important is for us to ensure that security arrangements are adequate and that there is a security doctrine that's consistent very much with what we stand for, path of nonviolence to freedom. If that is there, I think that would be the minimum required in order for us to be able to take off. If it isn't, then it'll be a case of too many missing ingredients. But to continue to really have a long list of conditions before it's okay for us Palestinians to reconcile is not in anyone's interest, including Israel, I should say.
This gentleman here.
Ted Katouf, Mr. Prime Minister.
Alafiq.
Since the death of Faisal Husseini, Jerusalem, the Arabs, the Palestinians in Jerusalem seem, forgive me, but somewhat leaderless. It seems that we have the PA operating in the West Bank. We have Hamas in Gaza. But in East Jerusalem and the Arab neighborhoods, there doesn't seem to be a lot of political organization, despite the house takeovers and the like. We've seen Arab cities erupt when put under enough pressure, but Jerusalem remains quiet. Well, how do you see the situation in East Jerusalem, and what is the relationship that you see that you have with the people there?
As you know, the PA is precluded from being active in a formal way in East Jerusalem. Nevertheless, we try and been trying the best we can, and not always the right way, as a matter of fact. In recent years, we shifted attention more in the direction of empowering Palestinian institutions in East Jerusalem to support them so they can actually, in turn, provide the services needed for our people there. That has proven to be a lot more effective than before. In education, health, and what have you. We would like to be able to do more and better there, but again, depth of resources has been a seriously limiting factor. Nevertheless, I believe it's absolutely essential to continue to move forward along those lines, empowering Palestinian institutions. And by the way, when we were really talking about the roadmap, one of the conditions or obligations that the government of Israel accepted going back to spring 2003 was to allow Palestinian institutions in East Jerusalem, those closed, to reopen. Not only have they not been reopened or allowed to be open, actually every 6 months the government of Israel passes a resolution to keep them closed. See, this is, again, you know, settlement activity is important. We really need to continue to focus on it. But there are all of these other issues which are important, and progress on at least some of them would make a positive contribution.
I think we have time for two more here and there. Let's go here, and then we'll go there.
Sorry about that. You can just shout. Okay.
Yeah, well, good evening, Mr. Prime Minister, and I want to first congratulate you. My name is Uri Zaki. I'm from Israel. I live here now. And I think I speak in the name of many Israelis who felt thrilled today by the vote. And I also want to congratulate you for your successes in Palestine in institution building. But now after the congratulations, I want to ask you a tough question. What would you say about the argument that your success and the mere existence of the PA after so many years after the interim agreement ended makes the Israeli occupation more sustainable by being a deluxe occupation where you don't have to manage the population but only the territory?
A deluxe occupation, did you say?
Deluxe. Deluxe. Deluxe.
Five-star.
Five-star occupation, five-star. Yeah.
Four seasons of occupations.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Not to endorse any hotel. But
there is, you know, there is that risk. And actually, significant number of people early on thought that this is what our program was about. They were skeptics. But the passage of time and messaging on the content of what we were trying to do, that gave way to more credibility on behalf of that which we were trying to accomplish. Interestingly, actually, if you objectively observe developments and monitor them, I think we are on the downside now, with more people beginning to buy into the notion that this is really about adapting to the reality of prolonged occupation, not about securing freedom for our people. I mean, there is definitely that risk. But I would not personally recommend that people invest in this notion too much. Right? Let me tell you why. I mean, you can make all Palestinians millionaires. I don't know if this is possible, but assume it is. You can make them all millionaires. You're not going to solve the problem. Because this conflict, at its core, is a political conflict that requires political resolution. And conversely, just because people are not really making it doesn't really mean, you know, that all that they're going to be looking for is improving their living conditions. This occupation cannot but end because it's oppressive to us and oppressive and corrosive to the Israelis. You see, even if from Israel's point of view, the past 4 or 5 years have been okay in the sense of security having become better, without them having to worry about it, they went through an elections campaign without really having to address the issue, and there is a risk that they might go through another elections campaign without getting to this issue, unless someone early on starts putting things before the Israeli electorate and public in general, people of the region in general, this country, and I think that's important. Although the past 4 or 5 years have been like that, I think it's wrong to really be too sanguine about sustainability of the status quo. There's a great deal of risk. Not to mention that even if, you know, things were and can be presumed to continue to proceed in the way or along the lines they have been proceeding over the past 4 or 5 years, I mean, I do not believe, and you saw some samples of Israeli public opinion, occupation is corrosive to Israel. And it's just not going to really continue. It's oppressive to us, corrosive to them. It cannot but end. So I'm not too worried about this. I mean, a lot of our detractors certainly have invested in this theory to attack us, to undermine, or to cast doubt on the credibility of that which we're doing, to be honest with you. Unfortunately, the way things turned out, that lends some credence to that thinking. I beg to differ, though. the famous producer.
Not long ago, I had a meeting with Ron Dermer, who was in the film, who is the consultant for Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu. He told me whatever agreement that is going to take place is going to have to take into consideration the demographic changes, and he's speaking about the Jewish demographic changes that took place in the West Bank. Now, I personally think it's going to be very, 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 very difficult to remove this amount of close to 400, 500 settlers from the West Bank. Is there anything that you can share with us about your thinking outside of the box? Some kind of creative solution to where we stand now?
Well, you know, for one thing, I hope enough people in Israel get to see the movie you produced. What we really need is more activity that is aimed at producing more transformation. I think there has not been real readiness, and the conditions have not been ripe enough for a solution. There's I think to this day, majority, if you push people a little bit, not too hard, in favor, who still would find that this is the most sensible solution concept. But I think given the failures, they'd be right not to think that it's inevitable. I mean, things could really continue to drag along in a way that actually would produce eternal conflict or a conflict for a very long period of time in ways that are not really good. What we really need are more instruments that are capable of producing the transformation that's necessary. Move people from the realm of not only accepting the notion of two-state solution, but actually believing that it can happen and beginning to really view it as inevitable. When you really get to that point, that's when we will have succeeded. And so I think we really need to engage in activity of the kind that we're engaging in tonight.
Your question is specifically about settlement removal, isn't it?
Yeah. My question is, I'll be very blunt and I'll say, would you accept all these Jewish settlements that do not want to go back to the Green Line to stay?
Let me tell you, as a matter of fact, with settlement activity having continued for as long as it has, and settler population having increased so substantially, I mean, one cannot really but wonder, and a lot of those who wonder about the continued viability of the two-state solution, based on that, given that enormous increase in settler population and the extent to which it's practical to continue to think in terms of annexing settlements to the State of Israel. No, I don't believe that's really the only way one can look at possible solutions to this issue. I don't think. And I can tell you for certain that the State of Palestine is one that is going to be based on a legal framework that actually ensures equality and non-discrimination, regardless of one's background, ethnic background, religious background, what have you. So let me tell you, it may be, as a matter of fact, that as soon as or once the notion of land swap started to creep into the lexicon, that may have actually contributed to the problem having gotten as big as it has become. There is no issue, you know, for someone who lives in Israel to really move to the occupied Palestinian territory, thinking that, well, this is going to be part of Israel forever. If other possibilities begin to be considered, that calculus may change. As far as we're concerned, as far as we Palestinians are concerned, what is absolutely important for us is to have territorial integrity for that State of Palestine, and that means a state on the territory occupied in 1967, Gaza, West Bank, including East Jerusalem. That's what's really important to us. Some settlers wish to stay in State of Palestine. That's fine, and their rights will be fully protected and constitutionally protected. And like any country that's actually respectful of the rights of everyone. That's how I look at it.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mr.
Thank you.